Arr, Grog.
Hey everyone, it's the Sideshed Podcast with me, Peter Fickling, and Matthew Weir. Matthew, we're Warbisless.
We are. She's on holiday in Mallorca, isn't she?
Yeah, and I don't think you've seen it yet, but we've already had evidence of Warbis's good times pour in. Do you want to listen?
Yeah, go for it.
Hola. Buenas tardes. Thought I'd say hello. You're probably recording. And I'm having a right nice time, obviously. Having a jug of sangria. I've just eaten a divine piece of sea bass by the sands of the beach. And this is just day one, and I've got 10 more to go. Knows what's happening in the Archers. Don't really care, to be honest. Hope Shula's gone by the time I get back. And Justin, oh, he's awful, isn't he? I heard the whiskey sour conversation, and he's going to enjoy knowing something about Rory, isn't he? The little twat. Anyway, goodbye. Sorry this isn't on a voice note type thingy from iTunes, but I couldn't find it. So hope you're having fun. Mwah!
She heard the whiskey sour conversation. Are you sure she didn't inhale it?
I thought she sounded pretty straight. And I also, yeah. You are on the thinnest of thin ice when it comes to calling in ship.
I still maintain that wasn't me calling in from the festival, but okay.
Oh, yeah, I mean, whoever smashed your glasses and stole your phone has got a lot to answer for.
I loved the background music.
Next to Bob Marley, you couldn't get more kind of cliched holiday music.
People of a certain age, I mean, they'll remember. Do you remember the 80s sitcom Duty Free?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I feel like Kerry's holiday is a mixture of that and the French movie Delicatessen.
I am very jealous. I remember when I first met Kerry, she was telling me about her lovely beach in Mallorca, and it sounds idyllic, like this is sort of low traffic and, you know, people get around on foot, and it was sort of perfect for her kids when they were growing up. So we know that she's having a lovely time. So
I went to Mallorca once at a very awkward age. I think I was about 13, and there was very few other families in the hotel that we stayed in. The rest of the hotel was booked out by two school groups. One was a mainly boys' school from Stirling in Scotland, and the other one was an all-girls school from Manchester, and they were all about 16, 17, and it was just carnage. And by the end of the stay there, they were roping me into all their shenanigans as well, but I was really just, they took me to the dark side, I have to say.
Before we go into our ad break, I remember being on holiday with this group of very sort of gangly, awkward lads when I was a kid, and one of them got cornered, and just without even blinking, he pulled out a can of Lynx Africa and a lighter, and just marching around with his little homemade flamethrower. But yeah, so that's kind of like embossed in my memory for all time.
Yeah, let's have a Lynx ad.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, Matthew, Kerry mentioned her hope that Shula would be gone by the time she gets back. So that's not next week. It's the week after. How much longer do you think we're going to have to deal with this long goodbye?
Well, I did mention when I was in charge of the Sideshed Twitter, this is going on longer than one of those Phil Collins, honestly, I promise, Gov, this is the last tour. It just seems to be running and running. She said she's not going just yet. I got the impression they said a month ago, about a week ago, so we haven't got that much longer.
Mm.
She's giving up the house. temporarily to Josh and Ben, and now it seems Beth as well. There was that horrible moment when Kenton was saying to David, "We've got to stop her." And I was like, "No, no, no, Kenton. This is, you're talking nonsense, man."
It's a bit of a one in, one out policy, isn't it? Like, yeah, we're losing Shula, but let's not forget that her kind of her younger soul twin is, you know, firmly embedded in the Archers now. Beth is the dullest, most sort of ploddingly Middle England young woman I've ever heard.
We can come to that a little bit later, because as it was transfer deadline day, I asked people on our Facebook and Twitter, who would you transfer in and out? And I've got a three in, three out. So we'll come back to that.
I did realise that my elation was massively premature. What do you think about the house, the three of them going in there? Do you think it's, I mean, there's going to be shenanigans, isn't there? I mean, inverted commas, they're going to try and milk this for all it's worth. Josh, the young bachelor with the boring young couple.
Well, all the wild parties are behind them, which is funny because about 6 weeks ago, Ben was completely off his tits at a rave. So I just think that there is going to be some upset at some point. I'm wondering who Josh had in mind as the third person before he warmed to Beth, because he did say to Shula, could I share it with two more people?
Mm.
It was all a bit hard hearing that balanced at the same time, as we always have to as well, with Tracy struggling and having to go to the food banks. We've suddenly got this situation where, oh, would you like to take a house on and pay rent? And they're like, yeah, yeah, great. Oh, you know, I'll reduce the rent. It's like, okay, we've really got the tipping the scales here, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to explain Jarvis Cocker and Common People to my dad the other day, because he's been out of the country such a long time. And, Matthew, you're right. There's some beans.
No feijoada for me. Unfortunately, that's an irate Portuguese motorist, as is their wont. They're very horn happy.
In a tiny little car, from the sound of things. So I was just trying to explain to my dad about how, you know, he and I had never really, you know, yes, we've had some tough times, but there's always been the knowledge that there is a lovely, great big plump safety net, just like Josh, just like Ben.
Do you still sore about Big Track?
this is the thing. Big Track for me, and I'm happy to be wrong, Big Track to me is synonymous with bougie living and massive Welsh wealth. It's like, you know, that's Jeff Bezos money, having a Big Track. But it's, you know, it's an embryonic memory, right? It's sort of like embedded in there in the kind of early 80s.
Let's put it out there. If any of the listeners have got photos of themselves with their Big Track, I want to see them.
Yeah, Matthew, you know, you can be twins with Matthew, Ben and Josh, while me, Tracy, and the rest of the horror bins have to make do.
We'll have the Hovis tune fading up as Peter edits this.
I will say, we don't need to go into any details, but this week of all weeks, I think I can play the hard done by card and feel really unashamed about it.
Yeah, agreed.
Onwards and upwards, everyone. Onwards and upwards, which leads us very neatly into Tracy. And so obviously it did feel like they were spoiling us. You had Shula being gotten rid of, and then Tracy was just, it was going better and better. She's joined at the hip with Oliver. He's looking after her. She swallows her pride, goes to the food bank, and then, of course, gets her amazing job.
Yeah, it's that very moving moment where she's ashamed to enter the food bank.
Yeah.
Isn't she? And I remember last Christmas watching the news and interviewing people in food banks and them saying, like, it took a lot for me just to walk through the door. The guy was like, you know, I'm an HGV driver and I got a little bit sick and now I'm coming in. And eventually, was it Shelley who brought her in, the woman that worked there? Volunteer work. One thing they had, she said, there's a crate of Marmite here. So someone obviously loved it. And I was like, surely that means they hate it. They dropped off a whole crate. They didn't want to touch it.
Yeah, I guess that is a bit of a glasses half full, glasses half empty kind of litmus test, isn't it?
Chelsea likes Marmite, so we're all good.
Your memory for this stuff is incredible.
Because she asked, let's get the important questions out of the way, just, and it was kind of one of those situations, like in a job interview, where Tracy was like, oh, no. Oh. And she said, no, Marmite, love it or hate it. And she went, my daughter loves it. And I was like, okay. I knew there was something I liked about Chelsea.
Do you remember a few weeks ago, I was saying, and I think Kerry agreed, that Tracy was sort of showing what I thought was implausible levels of stupidity. you know, in various interview situations or dealing with people, you know, when she was interviewed by the by her former school friend.
When she went for the job at Felpersham Kitchens.
Yeah, there's been a few of those things, just where Tracy was sort of showing uncharacteristic kind of, you know, lack of street smarts. I was thinking about it again today. Like, it's just the crashing lack of confidence, isn't it, that comes with that run of bad luck? Because I feel sort of a certain amount of, what's it called? Kindred, you know, I feel a kindred spirit to Tracy in that regard at the moment. Like, just, yeah, where, you know, stuff that you would normally do with your eyes shut, like pulling a pint today, and she's kind of struggling. And then just the fact that Shelley had to talk to her in such kind of gentle and kind terms, and she was absolutely lovely, wasn't she? And yeah, it was very, obviously always well acted, but quite sort of tragic, really.
Yeah, I think the kitchen interview, it was the fact that the girl, Tam Brownlow, about halfway through, said, "Oh, hang on, I know who you are." And
how do you remember her name's Tam Brownlow?
I don't know. I think because someone recently got their wires crossed on our Twitter that Gemma was also the person that had interviewed them for the kitchen job. And I was like, no, it was Tam Brownlow.
What's the part of your brain that has sort of eroded to make space for all of this trivia?
I don't know. Hopefully the bit that used to remember Sisters of Mercy lyrics.
Ofra Haza mix of Temple of Love, absolutely cracking.
I know. The whole verse of Temple of Love, I'm just going, hum, 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 hum. I don't remember any of it.
I saw them by accident years ago, and they were...
That's a good shout.
They were absolutely astonishing. Well, I didn't know. I went to see Depeche Mode, and I didn't know they were being supported by Sisters of Mercy. And so all of a sudden, that little tiny man, Andrew, what's his name?
Eldridge.
Suddenly sprung up and started springing around. This is shortly after he'd sacked the drummer and replaced him with a drum machine.
Doctor... What's the drum machine called? Doctor something, isn't it? Doctor Avalanche.
Yeah. So, but I mean,
that part of my brain's working too. Shit, I must be probably forgetting important stuff.
There's a lobe that has just sort of like collapsed to nothing.
By the end of the pod, I'll have forgotten how to go to the toilet.
Look, Matthew, whatever it takes, as long as you remember Tam Brownlow's name and other Archer's trivia, it's all good.
Yeah, thanks for pulling me back. So Tam Brownlow. That kind of shattered her confidence. Plus, she'd already worked out these robotic things that she was going to say about herself in the interview, and the interview didn't go the way she wanted it, did she? And the questions became a little abstract. And I think it went okay with Gemma at the start, but with the Chicken Factory, but it was because the Chicken Factory for her was last chance saloon, wasn't it? And she got too keen and started pointing out all these health and safety things. I think she was all right with Gemma, Until she started saying, "There's a puddle on the floor there," and Gemma got a bit angsty about it.
Mm. I mean, it kind of made sense that they didn't need to give us much more than that in terms of, like, you know, their failing relationship.
That's why I really liked her interview with Kenton at the Bull.
Obviously, like, you'd have to be one of these freaks who likes Helen and Shula to not appreciate that scene. But like, there were, you know, even though she's been worked in a bar before, she still had that nervousness. She was still incredibly kind of, you know, hesitant and sort of like, you know, it was just, anyway, it was just found it, in amongst all of the excitement of Tracy having some good luck, I still found it a bit kind of depressing to hear her confidence so low.
Yeah, but she's going to, I mean, the Bull was featured quite heavily this week, wasn't it? Mm. I was quite happy about that. You had Jazza and Alistair playing darts while he's trying to shoehorn the party. Well, he was offered Brad and Chelsea to have a spot at Alistair's 60th, but he's pushing his luck a bit with that. Then we had Dave, but that's the Kenton effect, isn't it? David and Kenton having multiple conversations at the Bull, and then Tracy's first shift. What did you think of David pushing his luck, getting multiple free pints? Because he didn't want to pay in the first scene, did he, when he was just discussing Shula's present?
So I think it's safe to say that, you know, you and I can be modest about a lot of things, but our knowledge of bars and pubs is extraordinarily deep. I have spent, you know, I've been a local to many bars, many pubs, and Dave and his behaviour in a bar tonight was everything I hate about locals.
Yeah.
A certain type of local. People who think that somehow going to a pub for, or a bar for a long time buys them a right to be obnoxious in a way that, you know, a stranger off the street couldn't be.
Oh, let's have it straight. I mean, I worked in a pub in Bristol, which used to be ran by, well, which at that time was run by someone that used to run another place in Bristol that all the Bristol scenesters went in the late 80s, early 90s, and then they flocked over to the new place. You know, I got a job in there. All right, I recognize the faces of Bristol musicians and stuff like this, but what they expected was really quite surprising. You know, they'd come in, it was almost like something out of the Mafia. They'd extend their hand and go, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm an old face. And then, you know, no money would start changing hands. And you don't really run tabs that much in small pubs in Bristol. You pay pint per pint. And there was always these little debates at the end of the evening about whether they were going to pay up. Not when the proprietor was there, but if you were working the shift and they weren't, you know, used to get into that situation a fair bit. So David, yeah. And there was that bit where Tracy, she was pouring a pint, wasn't she, when David walked in. She said, is the head supposed to be that big? I was waiting for Kenton to go, no, David's head's always like that, Tracy. No way.
Yeah, all right. And then also the scene where he was sort of drunk and being obnoxious at the end. I mean, it was quite fun. I did quite enjoy the silliness of it all. And after what has been quite a bruising couple of weeks, you know, in all regards, it was much needed light relief, even if it was delivered by Kenton and David.
I agree with that.
Obviously, all to sort of like give context and to give it, you know, help us to enjoy Tracy's new job. And, you know, and so she could go home and tell her little girl how excited she was, and also sort of educate Chelsea about how, you know, I thought it was well scripted and well acted, sort of how, you know, as a parent, just the desperate need you have to look after your kid and how much of a failure you would feel not to be able to do that. You know, it was really moving.
Not feeling like you could tell them as well what had happened at the factory with her other job.
That's something I struggle with my run of bad luck, is having to kind of paste on a smile for my little boy, because he does, you know, you don't want to pollute his life with your unhappiness, you know. So having to kind of like, so yeah, I really empathize with Tracy, and it was sort of, I was very moved by that. So good job that Chelsea ruined it all by being up to duff with, and who are we saying the dad is?
Well, I put a poll out on Twitter. So, yeah, we've got a Chelsea bun in the oven. Let's see.
So, I mean, I hadn't thought of that yet. So, no, I had to hear of it. Of course, Chelsea bun. Yeah.
Well, I currently standing on our...
Currently, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, there you go. Bun puns.
Yeah.
They're pretty niche, aren't they? So at the moment, George is at 18%, Freddie at 15%. And where do you think Russ is at? 68%. Shame on you. I reckon it's George.
That will be terrible. That will be absolutely terrible. But I mean, I don't want it to be Russ, because I don't want all the people who hate Russ to be right. And by the way, this is Russ Toy 2.0, 3.0 we're talking about, not original, you know, treated his wife badly, Russ, the new Russ that we like. But yeah, so I don't want it to be Russ, because I don't want everyone to be right. But also, I think it would be fantastic entertainment if it was Russ.
Yeah, no, brilliantly.
I'm kind of torn on that one. And then you're the first person I've heard say George, and immediately I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Well, there was that thing last week. I think Kerry picked up on it and you agreed, and I'd missed it, where you said, did you think there was a little, even though they were rude to each other, there was something slightly flirtatious about the scene where she was cutting the guinea pig's hair.
Mm.
I can't remember the name of the guinea pig, so see, I don't remember everything. Lulu. Lulu?
Mercy is still clinging on. By the fingernails. Yeah.
There's that Black Mirror episode where the hamster witnesses the crime, the murder. So maybe Lulu has seen something, because the scene ended with her cutting the guinea pig's hair. Maybe they got it on afterwards and Lulu saw everything.
Strangest foreplay ever. Guinea pig haircut. I see, the thing is, right, so, you know, it's just sex. I'm not, you know, there's no value judgment attached to this, right? But Chelsea being a kind of like outspoken woman who, you know, famously has sort of like tried to dress in a quite kind of provocative fashion when going to work and is quite kind of like, you know, flirtatious. That, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that she would be promiscuous or not. I don't think she would have just had some tawdry one-night stand with George.
Well, Russ has been helping her a lot, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking maybe not George and maybe Russ.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, he's leading the poll on the Facebook page as well. Freddie and George are neck and neck.
No way it's Freddie. Absolutely no. No way it's Freddie. There's a limit to how left of centre it can be, right? It's got to be someone that she's interacted with. So it has to be Russ. It has to be George. Who else is there? Oliver.
We did mention last week that Chelsea has interacted with nearly everybody in the cast since coming in. There's only a handful of people she hasn't interacted in, but I would say in the same breath that it's very unlikely that she's got knocked up by most of them at the same time.
Yeah. But I mean, has she not had a bit of a flirty back and forth with Josh a few times?
She had a chat with him at the rave, didn't she?
Yeah.
I don't remember much more than that, but I'm sure she has.
I think you're right. It's the rave. The rave is the, because it was the, it, they made, they, you know, in an already crowded episode, they made time to call out the fact that she was, you know, really gone.
Oh, how long ago was the rave, do you reckon? Probably 8 weeks ago?
Yeah.
9 weeks? And do you remember Chelsea saying to Russ in the orangery, so you don't remember much about the rave then?
No, so maybe she might not even remember, which would make it even worse.
Oh, it's a rave baby.
Well, she needs to crack on and get an abortion if that's what she wants, because, of course, Jacob Rees-Mogg will have it illegal soon anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, we say George and Freddie are neck and neck. Thanks to Trina, Immaculate Conception has the same number of votes as George and Freddie right now.
I'd rather have sex with a God than George or Freddie. So,
well, we'll clip that for the Christmas tape.
Well, I mean, it's controversial stuff, isn't it? You know, I'm always here with the, you know, always here with the controversial takes. I think as far as I'm concerned, it's definitely George or Russ, and both of which are appalling people to consider. Hey everyone, Peter here. So Matthew and I were talking after the show, and he was adamant and gave the evidence as well that Josh is the dad. So I just wanted to say that, get it in there on the record. Matthew says Josh is the dad, and I believe him. So let's see what happens next week.
Just to go back just slightly to this family, it was a lot of people got very upset about the food bank scene. And then we had that scene at the end where Oliver and her were driving back through the country lanes in the car. And that was some light relief, wasn't it? I think even, you know, people had tears of sympathy and empathy, but they had tears of joy at the end when they were driving back through the car.
I don't know about you, but I, you know, I'm quite a lachrymose person. I'll, you know, cry at the, pretty much anything makes me cry. But there was no complexity to my feelings. I was just utterly elated, not in a complex or kind of sort of nuanced way. It was just, yes, this is brilliant. Tracy's not miserable. Oliver and her are back together as friends. I really appreciated the fact that Oliver didn't try and make all her problems go away, and gave her, you know, the more valuable gift of his sort of advice and his care than just throwing money at the problem, which, you know, he acknowledged that she wouldn't even
also,
take
that
away.
Piece of music is never wasted, is it? The Flower Duet from Lakme, in like every movie.
Oh, yeah, that was glorious. And as Tracy said, you know, that airline's advert. I mean, I remember as a kid when those adverts came on, I was like, yeah, this is an absolute banger. This, you know, like, you know,
was it British Airways?
Yeah, it was. That? Yeah, the big. And if you see it now, the production values are, you know, you see better TikToks done by kind of like celebrating GCSE classes. But you know, like back in the day, it was kind of like, oh my god, they've made a blinking eye and a beat. It's incredible. Oh god, my god, it's some lips, and they're walking around. You know,
so. I'm gonna have to look those up on YouTube. I thought Oliver was going to say, oh, I remember it more for the vampire lesbian sex scene between Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve in The Hunger. But there you go.
somehow that has, you know, managed to get by me.
You never seen The Hunger?
No, no.
Oh, David Bowie, Susan Sarandon, Catherine Deneuve opens with Bauhaus performing Bela Lugosi's Dead on stage in a nightclub.
No, this is. I mean, this is a obviously a massive blind spot.
Its finest use, though, is it plays in the background of the interrogation scene between Christopher Walken as the mobster and Dennis Hopper as Christian Slater's dad in True Romance, which is an amazing scene. And as that situation worsens, it builds and builds. Incredible.
Yeah, it's not an easy watch, that, but that's absolutely cracking. I've only seen that movie once. It's like The Big Lebowski. I need to go back and see it a second time. I'm pretty sure it stands up.
Yeah, I went to see The Big Lebowski when it came out in the cinema, and a friend of mine had a kind of a job that if his phone rang, he had to answer. So he walked out of The Big Lebowski, came back about 7 minutes later, and he went, "What did I miss?" And I think I said to him, "You're going to have to come back and watch the whole movie again, I'm afraid."
There was a whole load of viewings in the West End. This is in the, whenever it was when it came out. And basically they were designed for people who didn't want to have to get the night bus home. So yeah, you just watch, you know, a couple of terrible movies or even good ones in the middle of the night.
That is a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason I can imagine they put those showings on right in the middle of the night. And that's when I watched The Big Lebowski. Yeah.
Something nice and calm as well, you know, to bring everyone down.
Yeah. I mean, it's remembered through a fog of what would have been Cronenberg and Stella from those days. But yeah, so, it must be a cracking movie to, you know.
I thought you were being very pretentious then. And when you said Cronenberg, you meant David Cronenberg.
He's another blind spot, Matthew. I haven't seen enough of his stuff. I think it was, in my 20s, I was out so much that I basically didn't watch TV or movies. So, you know, we were talking about, and the same thing with Peep Show, you know, we were talking about never seeing Peep Show. I think it just corresponds to a period of my life where I was just being so sociable that I just didn't watch any TV.
No, I can relate to that. I mean, I've got blind spots from going to live in Australia and not really having kind of TV on demand in the early aughts. There are just sometimes people say, "Oh, there's this celebrity on TV." And like, I have no idea who that person is because their rise to prominence.
You wait till you find out about Terry Wogan. He is amazing. Honestly, you can love him. Honestly, he's a
That's
funny
the Welsh
guy.
Chap,
you
right?
Look him up. Yeah, Welsh one. Yeah. Oh, you do know him, but yeah. And by the way, it's a wig. That's going to shock you as well. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So come on. Okay. There's got to be a segue. Syrup and Fig, wig, Terry Wogan, Irish. There you go. Rory. My stomach was turned, as Kerry's was in that clip we heard earlier, listening to Justin, you know, oil it up all over.
The big question here, Peter, is are you going to be able to knock up a saxophone laden Justin Sexy Time?
Don't make work for me. Of course I am.
Justin Sexy Time.
Oh, Justin.
Justin. Justin. Justin.
I can't get the rattle in his voice. Kerry does it by mistake sometimes, doesn't she? Kerry does like half Dalek, half Justin sometimes.
Kerry is Justin's Sandy Likey.
Rory, you know, don't be embarrassed. There's some benefits. And I used to do similar things when I was a boy. I was nothing like him, but, you know, spiritually quite.
That's much better than mine. Mine falls somewhere between Oliver and dare I say it, Jim. But so, yeah, Rory's getting sourced at midday on Whiskey Sours.
Trying to blot out.
Yes, trying to forget what he's doing for a living right now.
Yeah.
And you said a couple of months ago when he went out for that night in Birmingham with Julianne at the last minute, it would be great if Vince walked up, gave him a little noogie on the head and said, "All right, young slapper, me lad."
Yeah.
That didn't quite happen. It's almost better with Justin, though, because
it was fantastic.
I can't quite remember. I mean, first of all, let's get this off our chest. Justin saw exactly what was happening straight away.
Yes.
The lie is gone, first of all. He fair play to Justin for him, regardless of what, however he was able to come to that, it seems from personal experience. But I can't quite remember, what is Brian's role in BL these days. He stood down as what? The chair of BL, but he remains running Barrow. And I'm just wondering, but he's not completely out, is he?
He stood down from running Barrow. He's no longer chair of the board, but he's on the board.
Because Justin thought he was going to get the job, and then Martin Gibson just said, I'll take it, and much like many people these days, takes the top job and then proceeds to do absolutely fuck all.
I can't imagine who you're talking about.
Yeah.
To be fair to Boris Johnson, he hasn't been doing fuck all. He's been out for a jolly with the police. He's fucked off to the Ukraine. He's been holed up in Slovenia, Greece, Czechos. And he's also, which I have peculiarly enjoyed, been trying to shaft Liz Truss the last week, which has been...
Has he been trying to shaft her? I hadn't noticed.
He's done a couple of things recently, and I mean, you've got to keep your hatred up to date and current. I am slowly sort of winding. It's like a nuclear reactor. You can't just flip a switch and turn it off. The amount of Steve Redgrave's training, he had to train for years afterwards to let his body calm down. And it's the same thing with hating Boris Johnson. It's so, you know, like it has to go somewhere. So I'm just slowly siphoning the loathing over to Liz Truss. And so actually, you know, Boris has been helping with that. Not Boris, don't never call him that. Johnson has been helping with that the last week with some of his shitbaggery.
Yeah, but I mean, it was sound advice to buy a new kettle, though, wasn't it? For 30 euros or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Therefore you could save 10 pounds a year off your 7.5 grand electricity bill.
Yeah, Fireman Johnson throws another egg cup of water onto,
So when you get the third of the way through a decade, you've paid for your kettle. So
right. I mean, it is sound advice. It's just not very useful advice.
I mean, one thing I liked this week was Curtis Stigers. You're familiar with the work of Curtis Stigers?
You could blow me over the feather. I can't remember when it was, like a few months ago. When I never would have had Curtis Stigers pegged as a kind of like left wing kind of firebrand.
Well, the only thing I knew about Curtis Stigers in particular on social media was two of my friends about 7 or 8 years ago used to tweet him regularly, and he tweeted back, and they just got into this whole thing that Curtis Stigers was their mate. And they used to just go on about that on Twitter. But yeah, he is quite a leftist, as is Richard Marx, isn't he? We should form like a supergroup of leftists, kind of late 80s, early 90s soft rock musicians. But he put out a tweet saying that he just realised that the next Prime Minister of England was going to be the cheese woman, and now he felt really worried for everyone he knew in the UK.
I've got some American friends who are sort of similarly interested in British politics, and they, you know, every now and again I'll give them a new one, like, you know, I don't know, like Marc Francois, and they'll just be sort of like, oh my God, yeah, it's as bad for you as it is for us. They'll be just, they're sort of heartened and also disappointed for us at the same time.
Yeah, most of that comes from my friend in Australia who sends me clips of politicians being interviewed occasionally on less than famous radio stations and asking me, sorry, is this a sketch or is this guy real? And, you know, I always have to confirm that it's real.
Australia, you know, punches its weight for dickhead politicians.
Oh, it does. And I think as a younger nation, when I lived there, for sure, there seemed to be a fair bit of corruption because people were like, well, we've only been going 200 years. Just, you know, it's fair enough. I got caught, gave it a go.
Justin is a kind of a beautiful proxy for, you know, all of that side of society in the Archers. And as you said, you know, he might be a monstrous shitbag, but he did, you know, he spotted a kindred spirit. I mean, it does make sense that, you know, Justin could be a glimpse into Rory's future.
Well, that's the whole reason I asked that question about Brian, because, yeah, he's kind of, you know, he's giving them a friendly little punch on the arm right now. But what if something in the future happens where Julianne Wright, as we learned her surname this week, gets involved with BL or something to do with it, and Justin is able to throw back in Brian's face in front of Martin Gibson, that Rory's pretty much on the game.
Well, Brian, your gerontophile son is giving a portion to an old lady who I, you know, been doing business with, or something. Oh, similar.
It's going to be so awkward, isn't it?
they have been doing a, I can't remember whether it was you or Kerry, pointed out that like there was a kind of glut, a sort of a kind of mudslide of plot that had been kind of held up by the monologues and the coronavirus, and it's all kind of spilling, washing through now, isn't it? It's very, very dense. There's a lot happening, and they're also building. You can feel them building to a whole load of different stuff. So, as I've said before, I'm not sure it's to my taste, but there is a kind of like, you know, it's. I don't think the Archers has ever been busier.
Yeah, it's a bit like the scene in Poltergeist where the Poltergeist finally decides, right, I've had enough. I'm going to go both barrels, and things start flying around the house. That's how I feel when I listen to the Archers. We get 1 week a month that's a let up. I feel where we breathe, and then it just goes back into this. Kerry referred to it as a cauldron of insanity or something similar.
I think Kerry would say.
Yeah.
It is very, very, I mean, just like, you know, you look at a new character, Ardell alone is involved in three or four different plot lines. Tracy, three or four. Chelsea's about, as you said earlier, like, you know, God knows how many different pies she's got her fingers in.
I did try to draw a diagram, and something was bugging me recently because I couldn't remember her very first storyline in the show, and it was the driving lesson when she hit Blake. Finally came to me. That was the missing piece of the jigsaw.
What is it? Is it anyone who hasn't hit someone else with a car?
Don't know. Only speaking of that, there was only one vote for Matt Crawford to come. Oh, hang on. Let me check my notes. No, two votes for Matt Crawford to come back in the transfer deadline day.
Anything for to hear the sound, to hear a Foley artist twatting a steak with a milk bottle to get the Matt's punch on Justin's face just right. To hear Justin being knocked down by Matt Crawford would be wonderful. Although, never really got the impression that Matt was much of a fighter.
No, he probably knows someone from Bermondsey will step in and do it for him, doesn't he?
For him. Exactly, yeah. He commissions violence rather than engaging in it, I would imagine.
Yeah, he's no Dirty Den.
So, Matthew, let's have a quick advert, and then maybe we've got time for one more dollop of poop before we wind up. What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So I'm looking down our list of options. Have we discussed Shula fucking off enough?
I think we've discussed it enough. The only thing I'm lost on there was at the last minute, as David was being drunkenly led out of the ball. I liked the bit where Kenton said, hang on, I'm going to let Tracy out. Like, she's a whippet. And you open the door and she bolts home all the way home.
She came out. She was pretty full of beans at, you know, for 11:30, 11:45 at night or whatever it was.
Yeah, she wasn't at 11:51 when she got home and had a chat with Chelsea.
No, but excited.
So David's saying, just tell them it took a long time to get the pants. And then, all right, I'm not going to go to the whole Jill pants thing. But because it is what it is. Soiled pants, the puns write themselves. But then Kenton goes, I've just had a great idea. So I think they're going to mummify Shula in pants and bury her to test the soil and then dig her up again in about 8 weeks.
There's a two thumbs up and a vote from me for that. Absolutely fine.
Because Kenton seems almost, it's some kind of weird twin thing. He doesn't seem to want to let her go. And I get that they're pushing that idea of separation anxiety from your twin, but as David pointed out, or no, I think Kenton was able to recognize himself, he's the one that normally buggers off around the other side of the globe and she's always stayed put. So yeah, Shula's off, and she said that if she told Josh if she gels with her clients or colleagues, she'll stay longer. So hopefully she's going to coat herself in super glue and just like stick herself to all of them and never come back.
Yeah,
sorry, she'll have
her belly out with a NUFC tattoo on it at St. James's Park before too long.
Oh, David said he came straight from an NFU meeting and that was why he needed to get leathered, didn't he? That was his reasoning.
It did seem a bit uncharacteristic for him to get that drunk. And he did acknowledge that he was going to be in the doghouse with Ruth.
Well, it's National Farmers Union, isn't it? NFU.
He does always moan about it. I do like a bit of agricultural geekery, but when it comes to David and Ruth and their fucking no-till teat sucking machinery, whatever it's, what am I supposed to say? All of their discussion, I'm so bored of their farm.
Yeah. In my head, an NFU meeting for David is he walks in, his family just say, now f*** off, and he has to turn tail and go straight down the book.
I haven't heard him on air much recently, as in fact, none of us have really, apart from the...
Oh, I don't mind him as long... I mean, Josh was... the whole reason Josh had to help Shula was because... or didn't have to, made a reason to help Shula, was because David was stressing her out. So I don't like David when he's stressed. I much prefer him, like you said, taking the piss and having 7 or 8 pints of Shires on the house.
It was quite fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a bit more. So yeah, let's have less stressed David, more pissed drunk David. I'm up for that.
Quite happy to hear David slide sort of almost to the, you know, to the margins of alcoholism for our entertainment. Yeah.
And if you want to slide into any of our DMs, what's our show socials?
Look, sorry, Matthew, round of applause. That was exceptional.
I did say socials, which made it sound like I was David, even though I'm as sober as a judge.
No, but also there's always a bit of Highlander going on soon. Beneath the surface.
Also, big of Kerry, talking of socials, we're on Twitter at the Cider Shed Pod. Big of Kerry this week to come out as a big fan of Highlander when she was in charge of the account.
It would have hurt her. It would have hurt her. But, you know, I mean, the thing is she knows that she's on the side of wrong to go against Highlander. You know, it is a beautiful movie, but more importantly, Matthew, a beautiful community that surrounds it. And
Well, she finally put that right when she retweeted someone from, I think, Liverpool Echo saying, what's a movie you've seen 3 times and would watch again? And she took charge of Twitter and said Highlander and signed Kerry Warbis. And that definitely was not me when I was in charge of the Twitter account that evening.
Thank you, Kerry. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we love you, Kerry.
So we've got the Twitter. We've got, you know, if people want to, they can leave a review. Go to preferably to iTunes, 5-star review if that's what you want to say. And then even better, if you can attach a little note saying, giving some sort of, you know, fair commentary on the podcast. And then Matthew, Facebook and Instagram, where do people go?
Okay, well, Facebook is a group called the Cider Shed Podcast. Thank you for everyone who was sympathetic to my dream that I had on Monday night going into Tuesday. It's not the first time I've done this. I dreamt an episode of The Archers, Peter. And I was already trying to write puns.
Well, you were accused of getting Chelsea pregnant on Twitter today. So
no. Who said that? Yeah.
Owen did. So, you know, maybe you've done a Freddy Krueger and sort of like dreamwalked into Ambridge and, you know, impregnated. There's a baby weir on the way.
I'm sure there's a Nightmare on Elm Street gag there, but it's not coming right now. No, well, my dream could almost be related. I had a dream that George was doing a sideline writing erotica or like DMing erotica to older women online and for like PayPal cash, and Tracy discovered somehow. Wow. I don't know why I dreamt that. My idea is that it was a mashup of George being a naughty boy and the Rory storyline.
I've got a radical concept. Maybe you spend way too much time involved in the Archers. <It's
not helpful. laughs> It could be that as well. So if you want to spend way too much time, you can get in touch. Yeah, our Facebook, as I just said, the Cider Shed Podcast. It's a group. You can get in touch on our Instagram, which is at the Cider Shed Pod. And Peter, we've got an email, right?
We do have an email. It's hello@thecidershed.com. If you have anything you want to say to us directly, send us an email. And any comments, much appreciated. Always lovely to hear from people. Lastly, before we say goodbye, we have Patreon. It's patreon.com/thecidershed. Obviously it's not obligatory, but any help is much appreciated. And a huge thank you to all the people who have donated. It really is very kind of you. Thank you.
Yeah, just before we sign off, one more from me. Our fantasy football league, Julie Fremantle still leads.
Get past that.
I know you were, Peter. That's why I'm saying it. Anyone can join, by the way, as long as you registered a team before the league started. So we have people joining, but it's just that you can't if you didn't set up a team before the entire thing began. So Julie Fremantle still leads in the Ambridge Farmers Conference. She's at number one. I'm just going to say where we are for now. Kerry's in number six. I'm at number eight. And I scrolled. An ad just popped up. I have to close cookies. Relegate the Archers with Peter Fickling is number 21 now because two more people have joined the league.
There is an elegance to calling yourself Relegate the Archers and then spot-welding yourself to bottom
particularly
position.
In a league that you cannot be relegated in as well, like the old MLS, so you're safe. Just as a further note, I did ask, as it was transfer deadline day yesterday, who would you transfer in to the Archers from previous characters and who would you transfer out? So we've got a top three in first place. Now let's do the outs first. So third place out would be Will. Second place out would be Pip, but in first was Justin. And then coming in, Rob, surprisingly.
Get in.
Came in third. Barb, you know who you are. You went on both Facebook and Twitter to vote for him. Nigel in second. I thought he was going to be the winner, but...
F*** off.
But Nelson came in first.
I'm not a fan of Nigel. Never was. I was very happy when he came off the roof.
So Will, Pip, Justin out, Rob, Nigel, Nelson in. And the clock has gone. It's 11 o'clock and that's the end of transfer deadline day.
Matthew, we should head off, say thank you to everyone and then have a very long chat about Erling Haaland and what an absolute beast he is.
See everyone. Bye.
Have fun.
Hang on.